But the basic premise is that in this version of contemporary reality, gargoyles are a real thing.
A real living thing.
A real living thing. Yes, sorry. A real living thing.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, Anna, gargoyles do exist.
What are you talking about? There's no such thing as gargoyles. They're just pictures that people draw and take. So they're a real living thing. And they are, not only are they a real living thing, when they're in human form, they're super hot. Of course.
Of course.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
For masochists and other deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books from a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
In this, episode number 147, we're discussing the genre of contemporary fantasy. My name is Anna, and I'm a librarian in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA, which is located on the traditional homelands of the Nuuli Southern Paiute people, including the Las Vegas Paiute Tribe and the Moapa Band of Paiutes.
My name is Matthew. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
My name is RJ. I'm also a librarian in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, which is located on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Stolo people.
My name is Megan. I live and work on the unceded traditional territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe, which is also known as the National Capital Region of Canada, or colloquially perhaps Ottawa / Gatineau. All the names.
You did get a lot.
Announcements this episode. So I mentioned a while back that I moderated a panel at the Ontario Library Association conference called the Podcasters Panel, A Glimpse Behind the Microphone, which featured me talking with several other library podcast folks. This is finally being released as a podcast episode. It came out, I think, just after our last episode. But it's out now. There's a link in our show notes. It came out as an episode of the Library Land Loves podcast, which is done by the Ontario Library Association. So you can go check that out. It's about 45 minutes long, and we're just talking about podcasting. There's some really great people on it as well. So you can check out their podcast as well afterwards. Announcement two, this is episode 147. So we're almost at episode 150. So please continue to tell us if there are questions you have for us or things you would like us to discuss in episode 150. We're not looking for like a genre to discuss. What we're looking for is like, oh, it'd be fun if you talked about
what pets you have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Q&A kind of stuff.
Like, yeah. What's your... I can't even think. It's like, do you...
Yeah, Matthew's like, unless it involves comics, I don't know.
What are questions that people ask each other?
How do we interact? I don't remember how those things work anymore.
Yeah.
Yes, they could be library-related questions or topics. They could be anything you want to know about us or want us to talk about.
Ask us about our non-book-related hobbies. Do we have non-book-related hobbies? Maybe that is the question you want to ask us.
Maybe don't ask that one so I don't have to admit one way or the other.
One other thing you could suggest to us for our 150th episode is things to put on our bingo sheet, because we've done those before and I think it's about time for us to update them. So if there's things that you think we mention all the time that should be on our bingo sheet, let us know. And there will be links in the show notes to this episode to our previous bingo sheet so you can see what was on them in the past. And then the final announcement is our book list.
Yes, this episode, as with all of our episodes in the last few years, has a book list of books in this genre, contemporary fantasy, by authors of color. So check the show notes, and also you can check our website, bookclubfrem.com, for a list of novels by Black, Indigenous, and people of color authors, contemporary fantasy books.
First thing, what do we mean by contemporary fantasy, I think?
Yeah, what is that?
Also described as modern fantasy in some places.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone want to give a definition? Anyone want to give a divination?
A divination. I'm sensing ennui.
Everyone who I have mentioned this month's genre to has been like, huh, like urban fantasy? And I've been like, yeah, but it can also take place other places, which I feel like is kind of the shorthand for what contemporary fantasy is.
Yeah. Fantasy that is set in our world at about the time that it was written.
Ooh, I read a book that is not primarily set in our world, that I was wondering if it counted. But we can talk about that when we get to what we read.
Mm-hmm.
I thought stuff like Portal Fantasy would count, because at least...
So I read something that described that, like, if some of the fantastical elements occur within what would be the equivalent to our world, even if they also go to the other world and have a lot of that happen there, then it still counts as contemporary fantasy. But if the magic only exists in the portal world and not in the so-called normal world, then it doesn't count as contemporary fantasy.
Like, I think I'm thinking about a lot of the isekai stuff that comes out, where it's someone from our world who ends up in a fantasy world, but they never go back to our world.
Yeah, no. And the one that I read that I'll talk about, it is a like fairy realm, but it is very much like off the coast of like a regular mortal continent. And they the main character like was born in the mortal world, then grew up in the fairy world, and then like there's a scene where they like go like sneak back out to the mortal world to like go to the mall.
Yeah, but yeah, so like the urban fantasy aspect is part of it, but like this is a genre that also includes like those books that shall not be named about magic users at a school, you know, like that sort of thing is also falls within the modern or contemporary fantasy area, or can fall within it.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have historical fantasy then?
On our list, historical fantasy.
I hope so.
I will double check for us.
If not, we should add it.
I feel like we do, but, you know, I feel like, did we read some kind of like historical fantasy at some point? Because I remember reading like the Naomi Novik, like Dragons in the British Empire book.
I think that was alternative history.
No, we did historical fantasy all the way back in episode 14.
Oh, I was not here.
Predates RJ by quite a lot.
Yeah, fair amount, actually. You get a pass, the rest of us.
I have no memory of that episode.
What did you read, Matthew? Can you find that on there?
Give me a moment.
You're like, the book, it lists a bunch of books, but I don't know which one I read.
I strongly suspect that will be the case. I read Hellboy in Mexico.
Sure.
Okay.
That tracks.
No, I also read The Girl with Ghost Eyes by M.H. Borison, which was a fantasy novel set in Chinatown in San Francisco, which I enjoyed. Yeah, The Ladies of Grace and You and other stories. We read a bunch of stuff that was good that month. The Ballad of Black Tom by Victor Lavalle.
That one's great.
Oh, that was really good. Yeah. Okay, so contemporary fantasy.
Yes. Back to the proper timeline.
The one thing I want to say that I thought was kind of interesting about this is that, like, so often fantasy and science fiction are kind of lumped together as a thing, but we don't really think of contemporary science fiction as a genre in the same way, which I thought was kind of interesting. People don't seem to ask for that or don't seem to talk about that as a genre, whereas contemporary fantasy is a thing. So just a thought I had. We don't have to discuss it anymore.
Matthew and I already discussed this a bit, so he's like...
We won't say things like near future science fiction or...
20 minutes in the future is not contemporary.
Well, then the books that will not be named are historical fantasy, because I think they're set in the 90s, but they came out in the...
90s?
Ooh, boy. I think they're... How old was I?
Yeah, they started in the 90s.
No, I think it's 2000.
97 is the first one.
97 the first one? Oh, okay.
And I'm not saying it has to be like this year, but like the author could have, it's like, oh, it's set in 1993 and that's when the author started writing it.
So it's like that gray area between historical fantasy has to be 50 years before the time it was written, and then anything before that is contemporary.
Before that? After that?
After that? Time. Wibbly wobbly.
So they were 1997, and I think the first book is set in 1991. Because I was born in 1980.
Wow, is he really that old?
Too much calculations.
No. Yeah.
No more.
It's 42.
He's older than you.
I do hope that someone listening was just like, that's what they were talking about. Just had no idea what we were like making veiled references to.
Which book?
Yeah. What shall not be named?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Anonymous boy wizard was born in 1980.
I'll censor it in the podcast, RJ. No problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, like, there's like Twilight and there's several others that I was thinking of that I'm like, this is definitely not, it's not just like a niche thing. This is a lot of big stuff.
A lot of paranormal romance.
Yeah.
You know, like all of that.
A lot of it.
Well, not all of it, but a lot of that falls into this. And yeah, there's a lot of stuff that falls into this category.
This is kind of a bigger, broader, like, catch category with a lot of smaller ones underneath it.
Which I think makes it difficult.
Yeah, I was overwhelmed.
If you're writing these things or looking to read these things, but don't want those? Like, if you want a contemporary fantasy novel, but don't want a quote-unquote urban fantasy novel, and don't want a paranormal romance, it can be harder to find them, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they don't have their own special, like, there's no rural fantasy.
Mm-hmm. About pigs.
Flying pigs.
There might be some like fey stuff that's not necessarily urban, but it's like it's a little bit trickier.
Oh my gosh. I wish the definition of urban was like it has to occur in a city with at least 100,000 people within the city limits. Lower than that is not urban fantasy.
Y'all can't hear it, but I rolled my eyes during that.
Yeah, I think this is a genre that covers a lot of stuff, but you don't see the term used frequently, I think because it's too broad, because you're more likely to hear like urban fantasy or supernatural or paranormal. Or I was just looking at the Wikipedia entry about contemporary fantasy, and it says that it's also like stuff gets marketed as magical realism.
Yep. There is a fair amount of like stuff that ends up in the literary, you know, and actually gets like noted within the like yeah. people who don't read genre fiction stuff that really actually counts within contemporary fantasy as well. And I put air quotes around that phrase of people who do not read genre fiction because that was an air quotable phrase I would like to note.
Just going to bold those quotes.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was doing. Verbally bolding my quotes. Yeah.
Do we want to talk about background with this genre?
You know, the first things I thought of were Neil Gaiman's work, mm-hmm. Neverwhere specifically, which is like, I guess, an urban fantasy, but kind of predates urban fantasy in some ways. Like, I feel like it came before urban fantasy was really as big a thing. But I'm talking out of my who knows where when I say that, because I'm not an urban fantasy reader. but also like things like, you know, chunks of like the Sandman comics that he wrote would count as, I think.
Yeah. What about like the Graveyard Book? Isn't that also set in like contemporary time?
Yeah. The Ocean at the End of the Lane.
Yes, that's it. That's the one I mean. Yeah. I mean, a lot of them.
Like, although some of his books, like timeless in some ways, like they take place in a nebulous era, I think.
This is something I actually think about a lot in relation to contemporary fantasy and even urban fantasy to a degree, is that often what time it is set in is just not really, like, nobody's giving a date
yeah.
in there. And there's often not enough specific references to identify, like, was this 20 years ago or 10 years ago or 5 years ago or current or 5 years in the future or 20 years in the future or something like that. Like, it's hard to tell. It's basically alternate timelines, right? Alternate realities
yep.
To our contemporary world. So like, I don't think it does a lot of good to spend too much time fussing over the exact frame. It's more about like, would we recognize some of the habits, technologies, and like things like that as like active to our world right now? Because I think that's really the important thing to it, is that we want to see how it's sort of a breakdown of our modern world, and we poke at it by these paranormal features and like poke into our not modern world in fun ways or constructive ways or deconstructive ways by using fantastical features. So it's not really about the exact time. It's about the features of the modern world versus the features of this fantastical universe.
Mm.
I think sort of broadly, is it like, does your fantasy have peasants and fancy dresses, or and swords, perhaps, or does your fantasy have cars and jobs? Right? That kind of modern concerns. One author I wanted to bring up as kind of the granddaddy of urban fantasy before urban fantasy was a thing is Charles Dullint, who's actually an Ottawa author, who wrote a lot of, like people living in the streets kind of New Ford, which was a quintessential North American city, but I always thought of as Ottawa for no reason I can really put my finger on. And then there'd be like fairy creatures / street punks kind of things going on.
Sorry, I not having known that he was from Ottawa, immediately my mind was like, wait, was his like stories about mystical creatures and going to another world about crossing the river into Quebec when you were 18 and you could drink a year earlier there? Where they speak a different language and you don't really understand the customs?
I don't think so. I think it was more like busking for the tourists that come through at like Canada Day or something.
I know. Just the idea of like Quebec being a mystical fairy world is very amusing to me, though.
A little bit. Anyway, so that was like my introduction to urban fantasy, as it were, and mostly through short stories, but he's like written a ton. So if you prefer novel length stuff, he's got that too.
It's interesting that you bring up, because when I was going through my phase as a tween and teen where I read a lot of fantasy, that was like the primary thing I read up into my very early 20s. During that time, I very intentionally did not read contemporary fantasy. I didn't like having the contemporary world in my fantasy. It kind of broke the magic for me. And so that was one of the authors I didn't really tend to read because I knew that there was a lot of that going on in there. I don't like it. I didn't like it when there was like the contemporary world. Like I didn't want somebody from the contemporary world to travel to or somebody from the fantasy world to travel to the contemporary world, or either way, like that didn't work for me. I didn't like just no reference to the contemporary world. So I just like did not for a very long time read any contemporary fantasy. It wasn't until I kind of stopped being an avid fantasy reader and was a little bit less like, that is the one thing I read, and branched out, that I started to actually take in a lot more urban fantasy. And then at some point it switched the opposite direction and I read a lot more contemporary and urban fantasy, and I read very little like just more traditional standardized fantasy anymore. It's mostly contemporary urban and fantasy. And it is probably, along with maybe mystery, the most common form of genre fiction that I take in now.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm guessing that I know exactly which book you read, RJ, based on the little description you gave earlier. So I'm like, I think I've read that. Pretty sure I know that one.
The other thing I think about in regards to this, that I think a lot of people probably don't is our superhero comics, where like, what's the difference between the X-Men being mutants because they're evolving versus the X-Men having, you know, magic powers because they are the descendants of magical creatures? You know, it's just like, oh, we've changed the word slightly and now they have the same powers, but it's a completely different comic. You know, it's kind of an interesting thing.
Yeah. Even X-Men, if you totally keep with the science fiction explanation that they're evolving, there's vampires in X-Men. Like
Scarlet Witch is a mutant, and her mutant power is she can do magic. And I'm just like,
You said she has magic.
And she's not the only one. There's other characters who have very similar powers.
Mm-hmm. It gets to be a blurry line. Yeah, I was just peeking at my fantasy shelf on Goodreads to see what my background is. And there's a lot of comics, for sure. I think as far as prose, the sort of classic of contemporary fantasy, which is maybe like a good waypoint to that is definitely contemporary fantasy, I don't think of as urban fantasy, is Practical Magic by Alice Hoffman. Which is very much like suburban or rural fantasy. Probably suburban. And other than that, the sort of biggest, like, the author that I most closely associate with this genre and have read a ton of is Holly Black. And it was actually a Holly Black book that I read this month, which was the one that you maybe identified, Anna, unless... Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like Holly Black. I feel like this is a genre that shows up a lot in young adult and middle grade fiction. I think specifically not as urban fantasy, but as contemporary fantasy, set in the contemporary world, but maybe, you know, definitely like not with the same sort of gritty trappings that we think of urban fantasy as having, which doesn't necessarily have to have, but yeah, different from that. And also, like, I think you're more likely in young adult and middle grade fiction to find contemporary fantasy set elsewhere because it's, you know, trying to relate to kids who live in the small town or wherever.
Yeah.
Is it nominative determinism that Holly Black writes urban fantasy?
I don't think so. I saw her give a talk once and she grew up in a haunted house. And so I think that's the main thing.
That's amazing. No, I think I missed out on an opportunity to read a crap ton of middle grade this month, and I regret that.
Yeah, I would agree. There's a lot in YA. This is every time we talk about YA, I always feel like I am like a fake in this because I feel like I grew up in like the era just before YA. And so like by the time YA was really producing like volumes of good stuff as a defined format, like in an audience that they were really focusing on and like putting money and effort into like publishing really well, I was like not into that. And so I'm like,
yeah,
lost out on that opportunity too.
Yeah, we're too old, Anna.
I know. I'm old.
We just had a good opportunity to read, you know, age-inappropriate science fiction and fantasy instead in our teen years.
Lots of that. Yeah.
How do we pick books this month? I see one shrug emoji.
Yeah, that may be the problem with us actually seeing each other now is that we're slightly more tempted to use, like, body language to communicate.
Yep.
Yeah. Someone asked me to do a buddy read on StoryGraph, which I don't think I quite understand the concept. And I did find one middle grade, but I wasn't sure whether it counted as contemporary or not. So that is the thing that I read. Someone asked me to do a buddy read of a contemporary fantasy on StoryGraph.
This is a genre that I like, and so I just went to my to-read list and found some books that worked.
See, that's what I did at first. I went to my to-read list and found a book that seemed relevant. And I got one chapter in and I hated it. And I was like, you know what? I need to find something else to read or I will end up hate reading this book, which I don't want to do. I've already had to deal with like one book I hated reading this year already. I don't want to have to deal with more. I don't read that many enough books to hate read these things. Just a hint to authors. Don't have your main character use a slur on page 6 of your book if you want me to like them. Just a tip. Just check words before you use them in your book. Also editors, check words before you use them. So what I did after that was that I went to RJ's list of contemporary fantasy novels by Black, Indigenous, people of color authors. And I looked through that until I found something that was interesting to me and that a library near me had. And I went and read that one. So thank you, RJ.
Hooray. You're welcome.
I like that we're using our own lists. It's great.
Yes, it is. So you can do that too, listeners.
Yeah, so this is also a genre I like, so I had a whole bunch of stuff on the shelf. So I pulled a whole bunch of things off my shelf, and I set them on the side of my couch and was like, oh, I'll pick one of these. And then I had to go pick a book up that had arrived for me that I'd pre-ordered a while back from the bookstore. So I went to the bookstore to pick that up, and then, of course, I bought another like title that would totally work for this genre. And then we had some conversation or another where I was like, realized, oh my gosh, there are a bunch of YA in this, and I don't read enough YA, and I like I'm always like kind of doing a little YA digging, so maybe I should just like read a YA for this month. So then I got something, went to the library actually to pick up a different book, and when I was picking up that other book, I was like, I'm just gonna go wander through the library stacks and see what they got. And I picked up several things, and then I got a couple of others as ebooks, and I started a bunch of them because I thought this might take me a couple of tries. And I started a bunch of them, and I finally found one of them that I was like, okay, I can do this. And that's the one that I read. I meant to read a bunch of others, but I also kind of got off of my own reading things. And hey, I read a book too. Remember, our twos for 2022.
Oh, excellent.
I have completed one for that this year.
The first book I tried to do was like, it was a brick wall, and I finished it, and it just made me, it was one of those books where I'm just like, do I like reading? Do I like fiction? I don't think I do.
Oh no, bummer.
You know, and so it really kind of ruined it for me this year, to some extent.
Maybe you just don't like book twos. Bam, I quit.
Maybe.
No more book twos.
So yeah, I've done one, and I feel like I'm a disappointment to everybody. I'm sorry that I've only done one so far this year.
I absolutely could have read a book two for this genre, and I checked one out, but I was looking at it, and I was like, I didn't really like the book one of this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a thing.
It was fine, but I don't really care. And so instead I read three things for this month, and two of them are book ones. So whoops. Yeah.
So you got all new book twos to do.
So yeah. I've just broadened my field of book twos I can read this year.
Totally. Yeah, that was intentional, I bet. I read Authority from the Annihilation series, and I was thinking for a little minute, I was like, maybe this would count as like contemporary fantasy, because it's kind of set contemporary, and obviously what's going on is not real, like not based on like just the lived world that we are in. But then Matthew and I got in a debate about like speculative fiction versus horror versus fantasy versus science fiction and what this counts, and I was like, dude, they all of the above, any of them? I don't know.
Yeah, that like the Annihilation books by Jeff Vandermeer are, I feel, very hard to define as a genre.
What is it? New Weird or something?
Yeah, New Weird.
They're also in there. Yeah,
yeah.
So I was like, I gave up on that idea and then read something, a YA instead. It was great. Also, I own a lot of books. Just don't let me go to that bookstore anymore.
But Anna, it's your one joy in life now that the pandemic has happened.
It kind of is.
Yeah, people aren't worried that my addiction is books just yet. I think I have a ways to go before they start staging an intervention. I'm like, at least I leave the house now.
Well, you know what, Megan? I see two blank walls behind you that could very easily have bookcases. you've got time.
A little bit of time. We might be moving. I don't want to get more books if we might be moving.
Oh, yeah, no. Don't.
They are heavy. Yeah.
This is definitely one of my like givens to living with lots and lots of owned books is I got to move them over and over and over again. I got a system for it now, but doesn't mean it's good and like easy and enjoyable. It's just a system. All right. So I'm just going to talk about one of mine. Or one thing I read. So I got one.
RJ is our monthly champion.
You get to start us.
You get the belt.
I won the month. Well, I mean, it helps that I did not read a single book like for adults. That's not true. I read a graphic novel for adults. But I read a middle grade. I read a graphic novel, and I read about 75% of the Holly Black book I mentioned. So I'll save that one for last. I'll talk about the one that I liked the most first, and that was Thirsty Mermaids by Kat Leigh. That is the adult graphic novel.
My goodness, that's a great title.
It's a great book. Kat Leigh did the webcomic Supercakes, which you may have seen. I know there were a few like chapters of it that were also like floating around online. It's very sweet, and she also took over Lumberjanes when the original creator left. And so, yes, Catlay is a person you may know without knowing that you know. And Thirsty Mermaids is a graphic novel about three mermaids who, I don't want to give too much away. And I also don't want to overhype it and then have people go and be disappointed, because I think I also love this because I haven't heard so little about it. And I don't understand, because it was like my favorite thing that I've read. Like, this is going to be on my best of end of the year list. I'm calling it right now.
Okay. So RJ, I guess the thing, without giving too much away, what definition of thirsty is being used in the title?
I'll describe the plot a little bit. I was about to go into more about like these three characters, like relationship, but I'll let that unfold in the text. So there's three mermaids, Pearl, Tooth, and Ease, who are at the beginning of the story looking, through shipwrecks, for booze, because that's the only way they can get booze is on sunken ships. And they are all out of sources. And so one of them is a sea witch, a la Ursula. And she's like, hey, I just found out, the spell for turning mermaids into humans. We could go on land and get some booze. And they're all like, yeah, totally. they do that. They manage to get on land, with legs and lungs and find some clothes. They are exceptionally naked. This is definitely an adult graphic novel. They walk around naked for a bit, find some clothes. The clothes have a credit card in them, so they get some booze. And then wake up hungover the next morning. And everyone that I've recommended this graphic novel to, which has been a bunch of people because I really liked it, I have shown the first panel of like part two of the book where they like wake up the next morning after this night of you know, more drinking than they've ever been able to do. And they're exceptionally hungover in an alley. And one of them is like shielding her eyes from the sun and like squinting and just looking miserable and says, who is that bright bitch? It's very good. I love a fish out of water story.
Oh my gosh, RJ.
Sorry.
No.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I love any story where it's like an alien or like a magical being or whoever, trying to masquerade as human and doing so very like poorly. I'm so charmed by that. And that this has a lot of that. It's so funny and so like queer and fun, and it is also like very touching and goes in directions I didn't expect it to go, and I just loved every part of it so much. So that is about some mermaids getting some booze that turns into a very sweet, funny, touching, queer, excellent story, and you should check it out. Thirsty Mermaids.
Does anyone have a good segue off of that?
Pretty much anything about that one. No.
No alcohol, no mermaids.
No mermaids.
No transformation. No. None of those things appeared in my books.
I was also so excited. I have a mermaids shelf on Goodreads and I get to use it so rarely.
Nice. Yeah, there's been a small handful of mermaid stuff.
There was that episode. We discussed a mermaid book on this podcast several years ago, which was like in the paranormal episode or something. There's like, I believe we've read a large clip of it in maybe a bonus episode, because it was all about like visualizing yourself as a mermaid in Atlantis. It was a very weird book.
Definitely.
Oh, wait. No, I do have a segue. My book was called Black Water. Water Sister by Zen Cho. So Black Water Sister by Zen Cho, which is a book set in Penang, Malaysia, about a young woman, Jess, who has graduated from university and can't find a job. And she is the child of Chinese Malaysian immigrants to America. So she is very American, but her parents are moving back to Malaysia and for a variety of reasons. And she moves back with them, in part because she can't find a job and she wants to be with her family, but also because her girlfriend is starting a PhD program, I think it was, in Singapore. And so she's like, hey, Singapore is near Malaysia. I can get over there and go and be with my girlfriend. We can figure things out once I get there. I can find work somewhere. And so there's a lot of stuff about like her kind of to use RJ's terminology, a fish out of water, in like not having grown up in this place, not knowing her relatives, that aspect of things. And then her grandmother, who had died the year previously and who she was not really familiar with, comes and starts like haunting her. And it turns out her grandmother was a medium for a god, the Blackwater sister of the title, who was a small god at a shrine. And there's lots of other gods and spirits and magical creatures that are around that nobody can really see, but that can affect the real world. And so she just has to kind of deal with her grandmother, who won't go away and bothers her a lot. Like the shrine where her grandmother had been a medium, like being under threat from development of like condos, and that sort of thing. It was pretty good. You know, I didn't love it, but I think other people will like it a lot. You know, I think that if I saw another book by Zen Cho that had a plot that sounded really interesting to me, I might pick it up. I feel like it didn't quite, all the different threads didn't quite fit together. Like something seemed kind of missing to me in it, but that could just be me. And I'm sure other people didn't feel the same way, but I liked it. Part of the reason I think I liked it, two of the reasons I think I liked it were one, it reminded me of the time I spent in Malaysia, which was years ago now, but I spent several months in Malaysia. I've been to Penang, where the story takes place. There's a lot of untranslated stuff in here. And I complained about it when we read the Amish romance novel. But I think really I've realized what my complaint was, it was the italics. It was the constant italicization that just pissed me off. Here, it's not italicized. It's just in the text. And I'm like, I don't know what that word means. That's fine. And it didn't bother me as much. And I think if the Amish romance novel I'd read hadn't italicized, like, the word coffee 8 times per page, I wouldn't have cared. So, yeah. So it was nice to kind of, like, get a reminder of this country that I really enjoyed being in and having some familiarity with. And so, like, it helped me understand how the characters were speaking. A lot of the characters are written as not speaking standard North American English. They're using terms and stuff that are common in Malaysia. And I was like, oh, like I could hear the voices in my head because I was familiar with having interacted with people there. And some stuff I'm like, so I didn't know all the words, but I knew a small portion of them, which kind of helped as well. So yeah, I don't know. And then the thing about, there's a line here's, this is the part I don't really want to talk about in the podcast to some extent, cause I know my mom listens to the podcast. I was just talking to her about it today. But page 2 of the book had this line. I might edit this entire section out. We'll see. It was a huge deal to be moving countries at her age. The main character's parents, mom's age, even if she and dad called it going home. Back to Malaysia, they said, as though the past 19 years had been a temporary aberration instead of Jess's entire life. And that was something that kind of hit close to me in some ways, because my parents moved back to not the country that we'd lived in previously, but to a country nearby, no longer live in Canada. And I'm like, oh, but Canada is my home. And to you, it was a temporary aberration. They would never describe it as such. And I'm sure that like, she'll like, this is the reason I might edit this section out, cause I don't really want to talk to my parents about this. but just something that I thought about when reading this book. So yeah, check it out. I think, I don't know if it's not, if you like the idea of reading a book set in Malaysia about spirits and stuff, gangsters, what was the author described it as ghost grandmas and gangsters. So
that's a great 3-word cell.
It is an alliterative cell.
I have it on my shelf right now, actually. So maybe I'll pick it up after this.
Oh, I also wanted to mention, about the plot of Thirsty Mermaids, that they realize after they wake up that they don't know how to change back into mermaids. That seems important to the plot, is that they're stuck as humans.
The worst fate.
I had a vague premonition that that's the direction that was going to go in.
Yeah, that makes sense. There is a panel that I almost took a picture of and sent to you all, but like specifically to Matthew, which is, it's like they're on the couch with the bartender who they end up crashing with. And it says, and then she explained capitalism to the mermaids.
That's wonderful. Thank you, RJ.
Mm-hmm. It's very good. I'm going to go buy my own copy. But a different book that I read this month was a middle grade novel called Dragons in a Bag by Zeta Elliott. This is book one of a series. I enjoyed it. It was a pretty quick read. It's like under 150 pages. No, actually, it's 150 pages exactly. And it is about a young boy named Jackson, spelled with an X, Jax, not Jack, who is dropped off with a friend of his mother's who he doesn't really know because his mom has some foreclosure legal stuff to deal with that day. This is the only adult who can take him in for the day. And she seems very eccentric and mean, but then it turns out she's got a connection to some magic. She's a witch, and also she's got dragons in her bag, as the title would imply. They're in a box at first, and then they end up in a mint tin, and then the mint tin ends up in her bag.
That's a really important thing to establish, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Key plot points.
Yeah, this was a sweet little story. Like, I felt like it was pretty, like, lighthearted and gentle, but also had some adventure and also some, like, real-world stuff about, like, his, you know, his mom being, like, a struggling single mom and struggling financially. I did feel like, in part, the plot was a little spoiled for me because book two of the series is titled The Dragon Thief, and there's a picture of, like, one of the characters on the cover with one of the dragons, and it's like, oh, one of the dragons is going to get stolen, and that character is going to do it. So, spoiler alert. But it also, something I feel like would have just elevated it for me is if it didn't all take place in one afternoon. Because there's a lot of action and adventure and also a lot of emotional growth that happens over the course of a few hours. And it kind of feels like when you're running a Dungeons and Dragons session and, like, this is happening, you have, like, this encounter, and you go here and you do that, and then, like, you check in and you're like, wait, when was the last time we took a long rest? Did we do all that in one day? That doesn't make sense. That wouldn't have happened that way. Yeah, the sense of time just was off for me. And I think it just would have been a stronger story if, like, this was, like, everyone he's meeting for the first time, if this character, Ma, the older woman who is a witch, if Ma was, like, an adult that he had met a few times and didn't really like, or if, you know, she babysat him when he was really young, but he hasn't seen her in a long time, or something that would make the sort of arc of that relationship happening as fast as it does make a little more sense. And also, I just wanted this kid to have more time to process. Like, he found out magic is real and decides to become an apprentice to a witch, like, in one afternoon. And it's like, take some time. Take all the time you need. Like,
how old are they?
I think Jackson's, I don't actually remember, in, like, the 9 to 12 range.
I feel that's, like, an age where the kids might just make those life-changing decisions if they came across. They're like, oh, yeah, no, I'm going to do this forever. It's maybe?
Sure, yeah, for sure. I just think, like, give the kid time to process. Yeah, it's totally the kind of thing that might not actually bother a kid reading it. But, like, as an adult, I was like, take a few days. You know, you did a lot of stuff today. Just take a breather.
I do like the idea that, like, book two picks up and the main character is, like, completely forgotten that they even made that promise. And they're like, no, I'm going to be a truck driver. Like, but who knows?
No, I'm just going to drop in. I tried to read a middle grade, like I said, but the middle grade that I read, it's called The Forbidden Library by DeJangler Wexler. But it ended up being set in, like, Gaslight to beginning of electricity time, and I'm like, no, not contemporary enough.
Okay, so as I mentioned, I started several different YA fantasies because, as I suspected, it took me a couple of tries to find one that, like, felt like the right, I don't know, approachability for my mood / also just, like, my lack of reading YA very often, and so, like having to adjust into that. Because it is a different tone and like aimed at a different audience and way. So the funny thing was that I started all four of these. All four of them started in the same basic way, which is mid something happening that was distressing or like problematic or like issues were clearly building on the immediate horizon. And the whole thing was related to a mistake the protagonist was making. Right. So like all four of them started straight into that. And I was like, oh. Got it. That's the way these go. I see. So I finally just went back to one of them where I kind of like the voice of the main character and just kept going with that one. So I ended up reading Storm and Fury by Jennifer L. Armentrout. I believe it's how you say her name. And it's basically a paranormal romance contemporary fantasy. So that is definitely a thing that you notice in a lot of urban fantasy is there's a high propensity towards romance within those. Not universal, just there's a good volume of that in there.
It's romance, private investigators, and that's like seems like a lot of the urban fantasy area, like those two things. Sometimes both at the same time.
Yeah. So it is a little, it's definitely a little on the romance-y side of things. But the basic premise is that in this version of contemporary reality, gargoyles are a real thing. And gargoyles are protectors. And they fight demons.
A real living thing. They are a real thing in this world.
Yeah. I was going to say, Anna, gargoyles do exist.
What are you talking about? There's no such thing as gargoyles. They're just pictures that people draw and take. Not like I've seen them before, which I have, but like, whatever. So they're a real living thing. And they are, not only are they a real living thing, when they're in human form, they're super hot. Of course.
Of course.
That sort of romance, okay.
Yeah. So honestly, I will say a lot of me reading this was me just like getting a kick out of the structures of this. So like super hot gargoyles that like fight demons, and there's a romance going on between a human and a super hot gargoyle that fights demons. It's like, yeah, okay, this is entertaining.
Here's my question. How much clothing do the gargoyles wear? Do they wear like shirts?
They do. There's regular discussions of them being torn. Yeah, I'm telling you guys, I got such a kick out of reading this. So that's the basic like underlying structures of the world. It's basically a sort of biblical kind of like angels and demons war thing going on, and the apocalypse is about to happen or something like that, because the big bad, not exactly Lucifer, you know, it plays hot and loose with the biblical structures of things, but that's fine. Like it's not really following those models. It's just using them as the basis for its world, of magic and paranormal. So the main character has a big secret of some kind. She's human, but not actually.
She's a mermaid.
Non-water-based magic, sorry. So she's like actually super duper powerful. So powerful that she can't use her powers, or it's like an uber big dangerous to everybody. And she's isolated, and she lives in this compound with a bunch of gargoyles, who kind of are like, some of them know what she is and some of them don't, but she lives there for her protection, and for the protection of others, because she's a weapon. Anyways, it's a lot of fun to read. She's very spunky, and like she is intentionally 18 in this. So I would say this is older YA, and that, they're very intentional about setting her as being 18, being able to make her own decisions. The main male lead is not much older than her, but he is older than her, but it's within the kind of space where I'm like, that's okay. And it's really just about her stepping out of having been protected in the space, taking responsibility for the powers that she has, and for the way in which the life that she has brought up in has kind of made her a little selfish, because she's always been the special one who has to be hidden and protected and, like, you know, is going to save the world one day sort of thing. And so dealing with some of the consequences to, like, you know, that, but, like, ultimately being a person who wants to take responsibility for her actions and do good things in the world and stuff like that. So that's basically where that's going. It's this is not, like, phenomenal. There's a fair amount of little editing errors in here, so this did not get the strong editing look it should have gotten. This is just, like, kind of fluff fiction, if you want to use that terminology for it, but it's entertaining. I did have a good time reading about hot gargoyles, and, like, it's just kind of entertaining. So I have no major objections to this. It's fun read. It's for kicks and giggles. And the main character is a lot of fun to spend time with, because she's clever and mouthy, and she makes bad decisions a lot, but it's really built into her character that she's just kind of impulsive. She doesn't think through what she's doing until she's done it, and then she's like, oh, crud. But it's done in a way where you don't feel like it's super juvenile, right? It's more like she's a young adult still learning to take responsibility for her decisions and make the right ones. And sometimes she manages it and sometimes she doesn't, but she knows that she's not always getting it right. And she's trying to take responsibility for that and figure out how to do better in the future. And I'm like, that's fine, right? Like, that's the kind of arc you want to see. And it feels relatively real to how we all screwed up in our young lives, right? So I was like, I enjoyed it. I had fun. It was a good little YA contemporary fantasy read with a fun setting and a somewhat silly premise in a good way.
Hot gargoyles.
With hot gargoyles. Yes. Like, come on.
Okay. So we've gone from the sea to the sky. Megan, yours is about mole people, I'm assuming.
No. So the one I ended up reading that my buddy read is actually kind of old, but I'd seen the title everywhere, so I was like, sure, why not? And it's The Magicians by Lev Grossman. It's a 2009 publication. It's about 400 pages and the first in a trilogy. And I didn't realize this, a TV series, apparently.
That I believe they filmed in Vancouver.
I mean, there's so many things that are filmed in Vancouver.
I mean, yeah, I was going to say, very possibly. They film a lot of stuff here.
I just remember Anne and I walking past this weird, like, house that was empty near where we used to live that I think they were filming The Magicians at. Wow, what a great description I'm giving. This is getting cut into the episode.
Any like, was it a Victorian, or what was the architectural style?
Yes, it had an architectural style, is what I'll say.
Sure.
I don't think asking Matthew what the architectural style is going to go over well.
It's Gabriola Mansion.
Oh, yeah, that place. I know which one you mean now.
All right, so the story of The Magicians.
It was The Magicians. It was 2016 at Gabriola House. I was right.
I'm glad we have confirmed that. So our main character is Quentin. Quentin is brilliant and depressive, and he's hanging out with his two best friends. They're all going... They're at, like, the end of the high school, whatever, and his male friend, they're going together to do this, like, alumni interview to see if they can get into a fancy university or something in New York City, and their other friend is going off to the library to finish a project. But when they arrive at the house of the guy who's supposed to give them the interview, he's dead. And slightly weird stuff happens, and then they separate, and Quentin goes into a garden, which suddenly turns into a much bigger space than you would expect following a piece of paper. And then suddenly, you know, he's in a slightly summerland and there's a really big mansion. And this weird kid is like, I guess you're here for the entrance interview or whatever. And so he has this entirely other school entrance interview. For witches to a magical school. Hurrah! Quentin gets into the magical school and so goes to university in Magicland to become a magician. So this is like three quarters magical school, but for I want to say semi-adults. You know, they're like 18 to 22-ish. They're like...
I was going
to
say for assholes.
I mean, I guess we're all a little bit of an asshole at that period of our life.
Magic University.
This character specifically, I thought was an asshole, so...
I mean, I don't have fond feelings about Quentin.
I was going to say, Megan, your plot summary so far sounds so cheerful. That's so different from like the tone of the book that I usually get the impression of when people talk about it.
I think the last chunk of the book really colored my experience of the book. Like the first chunk of it when he's in school, like, sure, that's fine. That's fun. He's doing magical things and learning things. And sure, maybe he's a little like... inexplicably too smart for, or too good, I guess, for the environment. But it's like, it's not an unhappy experience for him. Like, it's a really positive experience. And then when you get, like, they all graduate and they have this period of what the fuck. It's almost like a super rich trust fund kids now living in New York City and have nothing better to do with their time, despite having all the privilege and all the money in the world, except for to do a lot of drugs and be kind of shitty to each other.
Yeah, assholes.
Yeah, yeah. And then suddenly you're like, oh, I don't like, I'm not, what? And then there's like some Portal fantasy stuff. And I was just like, I have zero desire now to follow these characters into what is going to happen in the rest of the trilogy. You all seem kind of like dicks, and I'm sure it's part of like a character arc, and maybe you'll learn things, or maybe stuff will happen. But like, what one of my favorite characters is not going to be involved in this, and I'm just like, ooh, do I feel not good about this experience? I kind of want to shake off the privileged asshole film that now seems to cover me. And I think like what the author is trying to do with this, like magic in a world dealing with the psychology of people who are placed in this position of great power, and probably he's doing good stuff with it, but I don't think like for myself, I'm going to follow the characters, and that's just me, right? And maybe other people will find more value in following the thing. And it was like super popular, I guess. He doesn't seem to have needed to write anything else for like a good 5-10 years after that trilogy and the series and everything involved with that. So it did well for the author, for sure. But it had both like urban fantasy and Portal. 2-for-1.
One of my biggest problems with that book, and please, Megan, remind me if I'm misremembering this, because I read it quite a while ago, was that for a book set in New York City, everybody was white. I think there was one non-white character, and I was just like, you made that choice, and I think it was weird to me. And maybe it was even done on purpose to be like, reflect the rich trust fund kids doing drugs idea of it, but it just seemed weird to me.
Yeah, because the first three quarters are very like private university in a rural area. Like, it's not in New York City, but it's supposed to have taken magical people from a broad swath. So aside from like the guy who punches him in that one scene, like there's not a lot of diversity expressed, I guess, in your student group. But they don't spend a lot of time on like the people who aren't part of the core friend group of that, those physical disciplinarian culture things. Like, they get a little house and they're very like intertwined in terms of it. Like, it's a very tight knit friend group that happens in the magical school. So you don't really get a good sense of anybody else in their like year as much. So I think that's a valid criticism, but also maybe something like part of the whole trust fund kid thing.
I definitely do agree with you though, that I had no interest in reading about those characters anymore after that book ended. I was just like, not for me, but I guess other people like reading that stuff, so
I think you could probably find things to connect with, maybe, but like the ending was so hard for me to deal with.
Here's the question I have for all of you though, that I think is good to ask. Do you think you'd pass the entrance exam or interview to get into magical school?
What what is the, it depends on what, I haven't read the series, so I don't know.
It doesn't matter. Just like whatever you think it might be. Do you think you'd pass it? Do you think you'd be, you think they'd let you into magical university at undergrad level?
I'm too old.
If the test was opening the secret door at the back of the cabinet thing.
Not this one specifically, but just in general, do you think that they would accept you into magic school?
I'm going to have to go with a no, because I've never done magic before, and it seems like that's probably important to know how to do.
RJ revealing big secrets this episode.
I'm not magical, you guys. I'm sorry. I know it seems that way.
Bursting our bubble here. RJ, do you have one more book you want to talk about?
I do. I will quickly talk about a book that I have not quite finished, but have gotten a fair amount of the way through, and that is The Cruel Prince by Holly Black, the first of her Folk of the Air series. This is a book. I've read a bunch of Holly Black books. I've never actually read her biggest series, Teeth, the other fairy-centric series, but I read The Darkest Part of the Forest. I don't, Anna, were you being skeptical if that's her biggest series or?
Oh, no, I don't read, I don't do fairy. I don't know, okay. Maybe it's, there's reasons that I don't do fairy.
This could be due to your name, perhaps?
Shh. You're not allowed to say that. That's why I just said reasons.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I forgot that revealing a fairy's name gives you power over them.
So I have not read Teeth, her original, one of her first popular series that is also fairy-centric, but I read the Curse Worker series, I read The Coldest Girl in Cold Town, and I read The Darkest Part of the Forest, which is also fairy-centric. And that one is definitely, suburban fantasy, very much so. It's set, in a small town that is, on the border with a fairy town. And so they're, going to high school, but also, her brother's a changeling and that kind of thing. Or not her brother. Doesn't matter. I'm talking about The Cruel Prince. So in this one, it is, as I mentioned, not set in our world. The mortal world exists, but the main character, Jude, and her two sisters, her twin, Taryn, and her older sister, Vivian, were both taken, or all three of them were taken, when they were young children, by Vivian's father, because Vivian is half fae. She is their, by blood, half-sister. But her fae father, who is a red cap, came and killed her parents and took them all back to the realm of the fairy, and raised them himself. And, it is, I found it super interesting to read a contemporary fantasy that is set in the magical world, and our world is kind of the unfamiliar other world, even with a mortal protagonist. I think some of those aspects are really interesting and fun, and it is the older sister, Vivian, who is half fairy, who is the most rebellious and the most wants to go back to the mortal world, because she's the oldest, and so she remembers what life was like growing up in the mortal world, where the twins are a little too young to be able to adjust back to the land where they were born. So there's some interesting sibling relationship stuff that is also complicated by one of them being half fairy and then therefore having powers and privileges that the mortal siblings don't have. I will say that I started reading another book that I gave up on, in part because the protagonist had a lot of negative self-talk, and I also felt was put in a bunch of impossible situations and didn't really make any decisions, was just sort of going with what was happening. It felt very the plot was on rails and they didn't have a lot of agency. Whereas in this one, I feel like the protagonist, Jude, is pretty much the opposite, where she's impossible situations all the time, but is just constantly is just... I kind of like reading a protagonist who's just mad all the time. She's just constantly banging her fists and cutting out whatever tiny piece of power she can for herself. And, says early in the story, I don't want to be the Fae, of course I kind of want to be the Fae, but I don't really want to be their equal. I want to be better than them. Yeah, the like tensions that she has with some of her classmates who look down on her because she's immortal sort of escalate from this like high school rivalry thing to this like very royal court Game of Thronesy sort of thing. There is like an escalation from high school bullying to like espionage and murders. So I think Holly Black is really good at controlling like the flow of information in stories where I've read enough of them to know there's like some kind of twist coming, but she's really good at planting information. And then just as you're starting to figure out what's going on, springing that twist on you. And I think that's definitely the case in this one as well. Yeah. So this story, I will say, is really dark, darker, like, than I think The Coldest Girl in Cold Town, which is about like a town of vampires, that the protagonist gets stranded in, was like, that was very dark. I think this one's darker. And it's, yeah, the fairy book is definitely darker. It's really like, tense. I haven't felt super stressed out yet. It's been mostly like exciting tense, but it could get super stressful. I'm also wondering how committed I am going to be to having to read all three of these now. Yeah. Because it is the first in a trilogy.
I just did the first one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I never did end up going and reading others. Actually, the only Holly Black I've ended up reading, I think, is The Coldest Girl in Cold Town, and this one. There might be mm-hmm. something else that I've read somewhere along the way, but I can't quite remember for sure. And actually, I think the reason I read this one is funny enough because I'm pretty sure the description that you gave early on, if I remember correctly, I remember having this conversation once before in my life where I was like, oh, that sounds like this book that I read. And they're like, no, it's this one by Holly Black. And I was like, what? So I read I think that's why I read that. The Cruelest Prince is because that description actually came up. Somebody else described it very similar to that. And from that, just that little chunk of it, even though that's not really that's just a little sub chunk, right, of it. But it sounded so similar to this other one that I had read, which is like, what is it? Alona Andrews, On the Edge from the Edge series that they do. And so I was trying to, I was like comparing them, and they are very different things. They're very different things. Like that. And funny enough, they kind of sort of, I think they kind of both are about Fae, but they are different. They are different Fae.
Yeah. The last Fae majority urban fantasy that I really enjoyed was the October Day series by McGuire.
I never have read that one. But everybody says like that's a good one, but I haven't done it because I just don't do very many fairy ones.
That's fair. We all have our things.
I know. We've all got our things. Make it through one once in a while, but it's pretty rare.
I generally don't do zombie stories. And side note, The Coldest Girl in Cold Town, while a vampire story, is kind of a zombie story.
Kind of is. Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
I've never wanted to read that because I'm just like, but I don't like being cold. Why would I want to read about someone being cold?
I think it is mostly emotional. Coldness.
Yeah, I was going to say this
time. Oh, really? Is it? Okay. I really thought it was just about someone being like, when you said vampires, I'm like, oh, they're cold all the time because they're dead. Obviously.
I mean, they are. Their skin is also cold. But I think for the protagonist, she's the coldest girl in Cold Town emotionally, which that protagonist reminds me the most of Jude in this because, yeah, and it is fun to read like a protagonist who is like very like dark and willful and makes these like strong, surprising decisions.
Commits.
Mm-hmm.
Appeal factors.
I think, as we discussed earlier, like because this is such a broad genre, it's really hard to say. In some ways, like the there are so many different types of contemporary fantasy. And like, you know, the sort of person that like why someone would read and enjoy The Magicians is probably very different from why someone would have read and enjoy like The Mermaid Book, potentially. Although I guess they were both about people, magic things, drinking a lot, isn't it? So if that's what you want.
I think, there's taverns in you know, high fantasy as well. True. So that's not limited to this.
Maybe someone is just really into like magic creatures drinking. That's what I want in my fan. It doesn't matter if it's on Earth or on wherever. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to read about.
I think more broadly, you could say like contemporary fantasy, especially when there's a strong interaction with contemporary times in the magic, whether it's a portal or whether the magic exists in regular life, it's like it makes the magic seem like it could be more accessible, like it could happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you could touch it or be involved with it. It's part of the world in which you understand yourself to exist in.
Yeah, like you could turn the corner and something would happen and suddenly you have this magic as part of your life. Like you could see it happen.
Yeah, definitely. I also think that it does, like I was talking about earlier a little bit, it does give you ways in which the magic can unpeel pieces of your world, your contemporary modern world, and let you examine them. But it's not through the lens of like having to deal with reality exactly, right? Like the magic gives you a little bit of distance from dealing with your contemporary modern world. So you can deal with certain contemporary modern issues and like work through some of that pieces of things. But at that little bit of distance in which people can like, you know, levitate and like throw bolts of lightning and or the equivalent thereof and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, I think for me, something I enjoy about contemporary fantasy, at least like the pool of it that I've read, is having like a familiar foothold. And maybe this relates to what you were saying, Anna, about it, like, you know, making more direct connections to our own world. But I think also just as a reader, sometimes with high fantasy, I'm not that interested in fake worlds. That sounds bad, but like, I feel like there's so many high fantasy novels about like nations at war and royalty, and it's just not like plot lines that I'm interested in. And it's also sometimes hard depending on the author and their style and what's going on. Sometimes I have trouble wrapping my head around the, like, you know, the scope of this fantasy world. Like, I think I've said on the show before, if I open a book and there's a map in the front, I'm like, oh no.
Totally.
Now I got to memorize all this stuff. Like, feels more like a test, which is not every reader. That's just me. But for me, I like enjoy not just like having like familiar things to connect it to. You know, this one like has a map in the front, but like they also go to the mall.
I was going to ask, like, does it matter if it's like a map of like a country or like of like, you know, a small town where it's like, here's the mall, here's the ice cream parlor.
I definitely would prefer a small town map.
Versus here's the like the haunted bog.
Yeah. Right behind the local Walmart.
Yeah. Small town map makes more sense to me.
Yeah, totally. I think that that's absolutely a thing, because I feel like one of the things that always that I loved as a fantasy reader was the world building aspect to me, right? Like that's always a thing that I really have enjoyed, is world building and complicated, interesting world building and magic systems and like how it all functions and fits together, and religious systems and everything. But I think that like when you don't like everything about your world building to be made up, it's kind of fun to see the world building occur in interaction with stuff that you understand and you recognize. Because like I think about the series, I can't remember what the series is called, but it's by Kate Daniels. It starts with a book that I think is called like Magic Bites or something like that. And the whole concept is that like these like yes, Matthew. Bites. Yes, teeth gnashing. as he literally falls off camera.
Any opportunity to chant teeth?
yeah, teeth again. anyways, so it's set in a version of contemporary, like, Atlanta, Georgia, in which, like, in this version of the modern world, magic started rolling in. And so it just started coming in waves and waves, and then eventually it kind of took over. But there's still waves where, like, sometimes it's non-magic time and sometimes it's magic time, and you're just going back and forth between those. And a lot of the world building is around what that does to your modern world, how it breaks down and recreates power structures and systems and societies and money and everything when you have simultaneously both magic and non-magic existing in the same place, just at slightly different time frames, right? And I think that's fun, like seeing the way that you can interweave the real world with the world building of a magical and different, you know, world. It's just fun.
I think that's a good point to end on, honestly.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and YouTube, or wherever else you get your podcasts. If you like the show, subscribe so you never miss an episode, and consider giving us a rating and or a review. If you like the show, give us a positive rating and review. If you've already done that, thank you so much.
For all our URLs and social media accounts, the four in our name is a numeral. You can go to our website at bookclub4am.com, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/bookclub4m, find us on Twitter and on Instagram at bookclub4m. You might be blessed with Matthew's Instagram-worthy pastry photos.
Photos, plural?
We've gotten more interaction on that one photo of your pastries than we have on any other post we've ever made, I think.
Are you serious?
Really?
I haven't looked at all.
I never look at Instagram.
We've got like 3 or 4 comments on it, yeah.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, you've discovered a new talent.
Don't you have, you have more, because you went out last week and got more pastries. You have more of these photos. You just didn't post them yet. Post your other photos. Go for it. You sent me one.
If you'd like to send photos of your pastries, our email address is bookclub4m@gmail.com.
On our website, you can find show notes that will provide links to the things we mentioned, social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode, and our genre-based book lists of titles by authors of color.
You can also suggest a genre or title for us to read or request a recommendation from us. We have a form you can fill out that's linked from our website. No promises on reading your suggestion, but we will give you a recommendation if you ask for one. Also, to the person that recommended we read academic articles, we've added it to our very long list. And to the person that sent us a very nice email recently saying how much they like the podcast, thank you very much. We really appreciate those.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment, if they exist.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes are the first and third Tuesday of every month.
Join us again on Tuesday, April 19th, when we'll be doing one of our occasional media consumption episodes and chanting teeth, teeth, teeth more, I guess.
Nom, 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 nom.
Nom, nom, teeth.
All other media consumption is noodles.
Oh, boy. Yes. Yeah, I was going to say, can we get noodles in there somewhere?
We just did the food episode. Come on.
Then on Tuesday, May 3rd, we'll be discussing astronomy and space nonfiction.
Sorry, just an aside here. I realized that, like, the things that on, you know, on websites that say, like, I'm not a robot, it's so weird that it's I'm not a robot and not, like, I am a human. Because it's like the creators are saying, we're more likely to have to deal with aliens or, like, dolphins that are using our equipment than artificial intelligences. Anyway, sorry for... That's really more of a tweet than, I guess, a...
You're just doing some tweet rough drafts here on the show.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wrong format.
Just testing out material for Twitter.
Didn't go over well, so I guess I need to workshop it more.
I think there's something there. It is interesting that they phrase it that way. Yeah.
I've started now, so any talking about blood at this point will just be like not us off the cuff because we'll be aware we're recording.
It's true. We've missed out on that good off the cuff blood conversation. I did sit down to record and I was like, wait, what did I read? Wait, this is a genre episode. I need to actually know what I'm talking about.
We should have said that out loud instead of just being like silent of like what we got. I don't know. Anyway,
rock, paper, scissors happened, folks.
Yeah, rock, paper, scissors happened, folks.